From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
For part of the time that I was at Columbia, my dad was there too.
That's Alfred Lebrano. He covers class and poverty for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
He was building a campus building part of the time. And every day, we'd be at Columbia together. And I was trying to make a sense of the esoterica du jour, and he was just trying to put one brick on top of another.
Not only was Alfred the first male in his family to go to college, he was the first to graduate from high school.
The differences were starting to become more stark. As you know, I was realizing that we were related by blood but separated by class.
Alfred has not only lived this experience, but he's written about it for a long time. He has a book, Blue Collar Roots, White Collar Dreams, and talked to Penn students for a series on first-generation students for the Inquirer. And he knows how hard it can be to succeed if you come from a blue-collar background.
The single hardest thing to do in America is to move out of poverty or the working class into the upper classes.
So why is the jump so hard to make for first-generation college students? Today on The Why, Working Class Hero. So much is made of first-generation students adjusting to college, but what's less talked about is the challenges those students face getting a job after graduation. Jonathan Guevara, one of the people Alfred talked to for this series, has a couple of weeks left in his senior year.
My name is Jonathan Guevara. I am studying at the University of Pennsylvania, and my major is sociology.
Jonathan comes from a family that originated in El Salvador.
My father migrated in 1992. He was fleeing violence in El Salvador, and my mother came shortly after.
His dad's a janitor who doesn't speak any English. He has a couple of siblings, younger siblings, who kind of look to him for some help and guidance.
My situation, I always have to go back home because I have two younger siblings who, if I don't go home to help, they're going to end up not going to college.
Jonathan has been dealing with family issues the whole time he's been in school.
Part of this litany of worries that Jonathan has to negotiate is he has a brother who has some truancy problems.
They told us that there may be a chance that he had to go to juvie.
And so Jonathan has to leave Penn to go back up to Oxford Circle to deal with that, and to also to try to explain to his father what truancy is, essentially.
I mean, my dad doesn't understand what's going on. He just thinks they're going to take his child away.
And Jonathan has to tell his father, well, no, they're not taking him away from the family, but at the same time, he has to go to school. It's just one worry after another that, yeah. Like I said, that most of the Penn campus doesn't even have to come anywhere near dealing with.
What differences do class distinctions make after graduation when young people are trying to get their first jobs?
Like any other student, Jonathan has to worry about work after college. One of the things that hampers him is all this responsibility at home.
My plan is to start working because I really also need to help my family.
Middle-class kids can, I don't know, there's a tradition of going to Europe. They're just rewarding yourself for 4 years of hard work. Not only do people like Jonathan have the pressure to get work, sometimes they have to get whatever job there is.
But that whole process is harder because there's all these things you need to know to get a job.
He doesn't have the organic knowledge of how you look for a job when you're a college student. While a lot of kids whose parents have gone to college can tell them, well, you know, you kind of have to schmooze the professor to help you get a job, or you have to go find an internship.
I mean, I've always been open to advice. That's not the issue. The issue is that I wasn't used to reaching out to professors. I thought that was not the right thing to do. I didn't think that was their responsibility.
This is knowledge that is just, you know, not available to him. Now, he's had a professor, Annette Leroux at Penn, who's helped him.
I had Jonathan in a couple of classes, and I've had informal, what I call tea times, with some of our first-generation college students. Nobody has tea but me, but we have cookies and talk.
For example, she's told him that after you have a job interview,
that he should write a thank you note by an email
to the guys who interviewed you, and then the next day or so, send some thank you notes.
And I actually gave him some cards.
Friendships mean something different to first-gen kids as opposed to upper-middle-class kids, especially when it comes to making connections and getting that first job.
Right, and in my book, I talked to one person after another who thought of the idea of networking as being something absolutely phony and inauthentic. When you make friends, you're talking to somebody who has common interests, or it's someone you genuinely like. When you're networking, that's not necessarily the case. You're just kind of using the person to help you move along. And as odd as this may sound, that's anathema to blue-collar people who believe in these basic, strong relationships that have nothing to do with what can you do for me, but it's simply just a, you know, mutually admiring some, you know, two people who like each other, mutually admiring each other, and just stay on as friends. Now, this becomes problematic when you have to graduate from college and then look for work, because one of the realities of life, especially at an elite institution like Penn, is, you know, you've got to basically schmooze your way through. You got to network.
And, you know, Jonathan said that he didn't do that because he was so used to doing everything on his own in high school.
In my mind, I had to be able to understand everything myself, because that's how my life has been.
That when he got to college, he didn't know that he was supposed to ask a professor for help. Essentially, the problem these students face in college and beyond stems from a lack of cultural capital. What is cultural capital?
Cultural capital is having the things, the ideas, and the sense of yourself that allows you to be middle class.
Well, when people talk about social class and inequality in America, they often think about economic issues. But there are also cultural issues, cultural knowledge, cultural dispositions. And sometimes, for example, in job interviews or in school, they can be very consequential. So cultural resources can yield a profit, and thus they're called cultural capital.
Cultural capital is like knowing what creme brulee is, or knowing what Beethoven's works sound like. When you have cultural capital, you can kind of navigate your way through the middle class with more ease than you can if you're a working class guy and you don't know.
There are students in Philadelphia who go to highly selective charter schools, but research shows that they don't think there's any difference between going to Millersville and going to Yale. To them, all the colleges are the same.
The work by Annette Leroux and others shows that when you compare how working-class kids grow up with how middle-class kids grow up, you see vast differences. Working-class kids are basically told, you know, just shut up and do as you're told. No one is worrying whether you're self-actualizing when you're sitting there in the corner.
No.
Working-class parents love their kids very much, but they give them directives like cut it out, don't do that. They watch TV, they hang out with their cousins, they play, and they turn over responsibility to the schools.
Almost the exact opposite when you're dealing with the middle class. What Annette Leroux found out was that little kids growing up in middle-class homes, they're asked their opinions on what they want to do. Do you want to go to grandma's or you want to go to the park? And they're chauffeured from one life-enriching activity to another. And after a while, they start to understand that what they think and what they feel actually matters. And that sense of belongingness is also cultural capital.
So middle-class children grow up questioning authority. They grow up trying to figure out that there's something that they can do that would be better for them, a customized pathway. Well, kids from working class backgrounds are more deferential. They just accept things often as they're told.
I just can't stress this enough, because people don't understand this. But when you don't know these things, when these things are not part of your everyday life, year after year, when your parents are clueless about this stuff, through no fault of their own, they simply don't know it because they haven't experienced it, you are put at a severe disadvantage. Even if you're smart enough and lucky enough to get into a place like Penn, you're still not on the same level as some of these other kids who have all of these advantages.
So, Alfred, given all your reporting on this and your own experience, how do you feel about the concept that people can just transcend class if they work hard? I mean, America is built on this pull yourself up by your own bootstraps ethos. Do you think it's possible for everybody to do that?
No.
Why?
It's a false model. Sociologists have proved time and time again that who your parents are is more of a determinant of what you're going to be than anything else. We do people a disservice when we tell them that you can do anything you want. You can be anything you want. It's just a falsehood that sometimes can be cruel to people because they'll find themselves lacking or they'll find themselves falling behind. And instead of understanding that the game is rigged, they start blaming themselves. And that's a tremendous problem. We have to give people a break. You know, it's just not fair to expect them to rise above. The single hardest thing to do in America is to move out of poverty or the working class into the upper classes. And that's a lesson that for some reason we don't learn. Despite example after example, we don't get it. Having said that, I mean, if you go to Penn or you go to college or, you know, and you come from the first generation, there are endless stories of people who've done that, people like that. But reality is more nuanced.
Alfred, thanks for coming in. It's great to see you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Ben-Yaakov and Alex Stern, under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari. We had editing help for this episode from Kevin McCory. Tweet me at AnnetteJH. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.